You know what I'm going to say, so let's go ahead and do it. That is, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's in the book of Genesis, chapter 25, and verse 19. And what we are going to see here is at the end of the last Torah portion, essentially, Sarah has died, and Abraham has bought the cave of Machpelah. Then later he also passes, and we are going to get this portion that says, "Here now are the toldot." The generations, not of Ishmael, Abraham's son, as we ended the last one with, but in this case, Isaac, Yitzhak, Abraham's son, and then it says Abraham begot Yitzhak. And Isaac was 40 years old, and that's the age, of course, that it tells us explicitly. So he was 40 years old when he took Rivka, a.k.a. Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, of Padan Aram, sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. And eventually it says, Isaac entreated Yahuwah for his wife because she was barren. And Yahuwah let himself be entreated of him, and Rivka, his wife, did conceive. And there were children within her womb, and they struggled. And she said, if this is so, wherefore do I live? So she went to inquire of Yahuwah herself. And by the way, this is one of the places where there is a popular teaching, a midrash, essentially, or a number of them, that suggest that Rivka was a prophetess. And Yahuwah said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your bowels. One people will be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. So, when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were, in fact, as she knew, twins. And the first one came out ruddy, kind of red-colored, all over, hairy, like a mantle. And they called his name Esau, or hairy. And the root word there of Esau is kind of interesting. It's maid. And nowadays you hear about a made man. That's a mafioso term. That there may be some actual non-coincidental similarity there. But the word also seems to imply that Esau thought he was complete within himself, like a self-made man. And we're going to see that that's a character shortcoming. After that came forth his twin brother, his younger twin brother, and the hand that had a hold of Esau's heel as he came out. So his name was called Yaakov, or literally having to do with a heel, a kev. Yaakov. Isaac was 60, 60 years old, when she bore the two of them. And we're going to get kind of a fast forward here. The boys grew. Esau turns out to be a cunning hunter, a man of the field. Yaakov, on the other hand, was quiet. He was a man who dwelt in tents. And the root there is Ahola. Remember, there we're going to hear Ahola and Aholibah, the two sisters that are the wives later of Yah, when he uses that metaphor to describe himself after the splitting of the kingdoms that are also going to come from, as it turns out, Yaakov. So, Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents, Ahola, or Ohel, rather. Now, it's Yitzhak, it says, he loved Esau. The father loved Esau because he liked to eat of his venison. Rivka, on the other hand, preferred Jacob. She loved Jacob. And Jacob sawed pottage. And this is kind of a famous story way on down the line. It's in here, and it really sets up a lot. So we pay attention when these stories give us a real glimpse into a long life as one major event. So here is Yaakov. He's making some pottage. You can picture him here in the kitchen. He's working. In comes Esau from the field. He was faint-hearted. He was literally, oh, I'm so hungry I could just die. So he says to Yaakov, let me swallow, I pray you, some of that nice red pottage you got there, because I am faint. So that was where the name Edom comes from, it says. And Yaakov says, first, now this is kind of interesting, right? Sell me first, and it literally, the word here is this day, hayom, your birthright. Huh. Esau says, well, look, I'm fixing to die here, so what good is that to me? What profit does the birthright do to me? Well, says Jacob, in that case, swear to me first. And he did swear unto him, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. And Jacob, true to his word, gave Esau some bread and some lentil pottage, and he ate and he drank and he rose up and he went his way. Slam, bam, thank you, ma'am, is kind of the implication. He ate, drank, rose up, went his way. And Scripture then takes from that this understanding, and if they come right out and tell you, it's kind of clear. He traded it literally for a cup of pottage. Esau, it says, therefore despised his birthright. It wasn't worth much to him. And that is a very key point. It literally is going to shape, as you might expect, the lifetimes, not just of these men, but literally of all history. Chapter 26 tells us there was famine in the land at this point, and this was in addition to that first famine that was back in the days of Abraham. So Isaac went unto Abimelech, my father the king, Abimelech or Abimelech, king of the Philistines in Gerar. Yahuwah there appeared to him, and he said, do not go down into Egypt. Because what have we seen? That seems to be the case several times it's happened in the past. Don't go down into Egypt. You dwell instead in the land which I shall tell you of. Sojourn here in this land, and I'll be with you, and I'll bless you. And for unto you and unto your seed will I give all these lands, and I'll establish the oath that I swore unto Abraham your father. So here is the point in his life at which Yitzhak too is now going to see the repetition of the promise. And he says, I'll multiply your seed as the stars of heaven. I'll give unto your seed all these lands, and by your seed shall all of the nations of the earth bless themselves. That's almost, but not quite, the promise that his father was given. Notice that difference. All the nations of the earth will be blessed. This says they'll bless themselves. And here's the reason why. Now, this is a very good verse to highlight. Because Abraham shamarred. The root word there, shamar, shema, he hearkened to my voice, bekoli, my voice. And he kept my charge, my commandments, mitzvoti, and he also kept my statutes, behuchoti, and toroti, my laws, my understanding, my instructions. He kept all of it, in other words. And that is why. And it says, Isaac then dwelt in Gerar. Now, I'm going to make one other observation here. This is kind of interesting. We're going to actually switch. We're going to see the story where Yaakov, and already he's appeared in the story. But this is pretty much the entire story, in the Torah at least, of the life of Yitzhak is contained in this one portion, Toldot. So here he is dwelling in Gerar. Men of the place ask him about his wife. And what does he do? Like father, like son. He says, well, she's my sister. Because he was afraid to come out with the truth and say, she's my wife. Lest, it says, the men of the place decide that they'll just kill me for her, for Rivka. Because she is good looking. She is fair to look upon. So it came to pass, after he'd been there a long time, here comes Abimelech, my father, the king of the Philistines, looks out a window, and he sees the interesting phraseology in the English is, behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. They were, nowadays we might say, is this foreplay? Is this fooling around? In other words, this is the kind of a thing that somebody sees, and, you know, you might even hear him say, go get a room. The point is, immediately the king says, that ain't his sister, that's his wife. They're laughing, they're playing together. So, he calls unto Isaac and says, whoa, here, what's going on? Behold, of a surety, she sure looks to me like she's your wife. And why did you say, therefore, she's my sister? And Isaac said to him, because, well, I said to myself, lest I die because of her. And Abimelech says, well, what have you done to us? Now, this is an interesting phrase, too. I'll read it the way it's rendered in the English in this kind of King James-ish translation. Because one of the people, like maybe me, somebody might just easily have lain with her. Yeah, you know, she's out there. We might have just taken her and gone to bed with her. And you would have brought guiltiness upon us. So it's an interesting, kind of an admission, if you will, of the way things might happen. And I think for that reason, you can kind of see why it was that Yitzhak just might have had some rational reason for his concern. Abimelech charged all the people after that, and he said, look, anyone touches this fellow or his wife, surely they will be put to death. So this king, again, gets the message. Now, the question is this the same king? Does he recognize this from before? The name is similar, but remember, my father, the king, could be a title as well. So Yitzhak, meanwhile, he sows in the land. He's planting stuff. He found in that same year 100-fold. So he reaped what he sowed times 100. And Yahuwah blessed him. And it says the man waxed great. He grew more and more till he became very great. He had all kinds of stuff. He had possessions of flocks and of herds and a great household. And as a result, the Philistines envied him. So this is kind of communism 101. We see it today. You got something I don't got, so I envy you. And as a matter of fact, I might even decide to take it. Now, this next set of verses here, kind of a brief story, is also a little telling. Remember, Abraham was a digger of wells, and all the wells which his father's servants had dug there in the days of Abraham, his father, the Philistines had plugged them up. They had filled them with earth. And I got to wonder why. Why would they do that unless they just didn't want anybody else taking water out of the same aquifer? Did they have that good of an understanding? Perhaps, because it was a dry area. Anyway, they stopped them up with dirt. So Abimelech then says to Isaac this time, hey, go away from us, because you are much mightier than we are. You're a rich fellow. Isaac departed then, and he camped in the valley of Gerar, and he dwelt there. And then again, he digs some wells, which they had digged in the days of Abraham, his father, because again, they were stopped up after the death of Abraham. He called their names by the same names that his dad had called them. And Isaac's servants, in fact, then it says, digged in the valley, and there they found a well of, and this is a great word in the Hebrew, Mayim Chaim. Mayim is water. Chaim is the life term, so it's Mayim Chaim, living water. You read this and you think, wow, that's kind of an interesting, almost a prophetic parable, isn't it? You get the impression immediately there's more going on here than just a story about some wells. The herdsmen of Gerar strove with Isaac's herdsmen, and they said, no, that's our water. So he called the name of that well Esek, which has to do with contention, because, in fact, they contended with him. So he dug another well, and they were after him for that one too. They strove for that. That name of the well was called Sitna. Sitna, now strife. But if you recognize the sheen, tav, and noon in there, S-T-N, Sitna, Yeah, adversary. Remember that word? Hasatan, the adversary. It's the same root word. And it does make sense that the word then in this case would mean strife. Then he left from there. He went and dug another well, because that one they didn't go after. And that one he called the name of Rehoboth, because he said, for now Yahuwah has made room for us. And this root word has to do with wide streets. So we will be fruitful in the land. Now, the sages will also point out that there's, anytime you see wells in sequence or something like that, you ask yourself, well, what does it spell, right? The first word, esek, starts with an ayin, and then you got a sheen or a seen, and then a resh for Rehoboth. So, eser. Oh, well, we recognize that word, right? It's the word for 10. Interesting. All of these things, again, because I started out by suggesting this certainly looks like a parable, and there's a parable of wells, and the wells spell 10. It makes you suspect, at least, that maybe later we're going to see that this has more to it than meets the eye. Okay, from there he went up to Beersheba, the well of sevens. Yeah, that's what that name means. Yahuwah there appeared to him that same night, and he said, Ani Elohim, or Anki Elohi, actually, I am the El of your father Abraham. Fear not, I am with you, and I'll bless you, and multiply your seed for my servant Abraham's sake. So there he built an altar. He called upon B'Shem Yahuwah, and he called upon literally the name Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and he pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants again dug a well. So then Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Ahuzah, his friend, and Phicol, captain of his host. So it looks like Abimelech shows up with a bunch of troops. Isaac then says to them, why are you come to me? Because, you know, you hate me, seeing as how you all hate me. What are you doing here? And you, in fact, sent me away from you. Do you remember that? Well, they said, we saw plainly that Yahuwah was with you. And so we said, hey, you know what we need to do? We need to make a deal with that dude. Let's now have an oath between us, even between us and you, and let's make a covenant with you, that you won't do any harm to us, because we haven't done anything to you. We haven't touched you. But as we have done nothing but good to you, and we sent you away in peace, well, yeah, how's that for a good time? So now you are blessed of Yahuwah. So it didn't sound like Isaac had any trouble with that. He made a feast. He set them up. They ate and they drank. They rose up in the morning, and they swore to one another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. So it came to pass that same day that Isaac's servants came, and they told him about that well which they had dug. And they said, you know, we have found water. So that well they named after the thing that had happened, their Sheba, or oath. So the name of that city is called Beersheba unto this day. And interesting, so if we have the name there, Sheba, Sheba. Sometimes the rendering is oath, and at other times it's the well of sevens. And I guess if you think about the meaning of seven, seven is a number of completion, so that actually kind of fits in both cases, doesn't it? Now, the Torah, the section here, the chapter ends with this two-verse summary of Esau, and it tells us a little something else about the man. He was 40 years old, and he went out and he got himself a couple of wives. One named Judith, the daughter of Beeri, my well, right? Beeri, my well, the Hittite, and Basemat, the daughter of Elon, both of them daughters of the Hittites. And remember, this is probably not going to sit well with mom and dad, and indeed it doesn't. It says in the next verse, they were a bitterness of spirit unto Isaac and Rivka. And remember that word, morat. There's a place that we're going to see in Exodus having to do with waters and the well and waters of bitterness. So same root word there. Okay, chapter 27 says, came to pass, Isaac now is getting old, and his eyes were dim, so he couldn't see. He calls to his elder son, Esau, and this is, of course, one of the most famous story next to the binding of Isaac. Certainly the latest and most important story in his later life, and it's going to set up a lot of things as well. Calls to his son, my son, he says, well, the answer, right? Hineni, here I am. And he said, behold, now I'm old. I don't know how long I got. Don't know when the day I'm going to die is. So I'm going to ask you a favor here. You go get your weapons, your bow, your arrow, your quiver, and go out in the field and give me some venison. Make me the savory kind of food that I love and bring it to me so that I can eat, and then my soul can bless you before I die. So Rivka, she overheard when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son. Esau went out to the field to do as dad asked, get that venison. And Rivka, meanwhile, speaks to the younger son, Yaakov, and she says, behold, I heard your dad talking to Esau, your brother, and he said, go get me some venison. Make me savory food that I can eat and bless you before Yahuwah, before I die. So therefore, my son, Shamar, hearken, Shema to me, according to that which I command you. So mom is basically going to have a little chicanery here. Go to the flock, and in fact, get a couple of good kids of the goats, and I'll make some savory food for your dad. I know what he likes, the kind that he loves. And you bring it to your dad so that he can eat, so that he, in fact, will bless you before his death. And Yaakov says to his mother, Rivka, look, you know, my brother Esau, he's a hairy dude. I'm a smooth-skinned fellow. Just in case, what happens if my father feels me? And I seem to him like a mocker. There's that root word again, like laughter. Yaakov, rather Yitzhak, mocker. I will bring a curse on myself and not a blessing. His mother says to him, look, if there's a curse here, let it be upon me, my son. Just listen to me, hearken to my voice, and go out and fetch these things. So he went, and he fetched them. He brought them to his mother, and his mother made the savory food, the kind his dad loved. And Rivka took the choicest garments of Esau, her older son, that were with her there in the house, and she dressed them up. She put them on Jacob, the younger son. She put the skins of those kids that they had just made into a savory stew on his hands and on the back of his neck, on the smooth part of his neck. She gave that savory food and the bread which she prepared into the hand of her son, and she said, go on up to your dad. And he did, in fact, when he got there, said, my father. And a response, Hineni, who are you? Who are you? That's an interesting way to put it, right? Here I am. Who are you, my son? Huh. Yaakov says to his father, well, I'm Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you have bidden me to do. So arise, I pray you, sit, eat of my venison, that your soul may bless me. And I think it's interesting. Rashi tries to say that here's Yaakov, who wants to be truthful. I don't doubt that he maybe wants to be truthful, but in fact, he's not. He has basically just lied to him, said, I am Esau, your firstborn. And Isaac then says to his son, which is true, how is it you found it so fast, my son? And the response, now this is another tip-off. I seriously doubt this is the kind of thing that Esau would say. Does sound like something Yaakov might say. Because Yehuel sent me good speed. So I got to wonder, you know, is Yaakov, is Yitzhak, is he starting to smell a rat or at least be a little concerned? It does sound like he has reason to. Yitzhak then says to Jacob, come on over here, son, I pray you, that I can check you out. I can feel you and see whether or not you really are my very son Esau or not. Yeah, does sound like he has some doubt. So Jacob goes near unto Isaac, his father, and he felt him, and he said, the voice, man, your voice sounds a lot like Jacob. But the hands, well, those goatskins fooled me. The hands are definitely the hands of Esau. So he did not discern, because his hands were hairy, just like his brother's hands, and he blessed him. And he said, are you in fact my very son Esau? Response, I am, a knee. All right, bring it near. I'll eat of my son's venison, and my soul can then bless you. So he brought it near to his father, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. And then his father Isaac said unto him, come on over here, son, and kiss me, my son. So he came near and he kissed him. And then he smelled the smell of what? The clothing that his mom had been careful to put on him. And he blessed him and he said, look, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which Yahuwah has blessed. So Elohim give thee the dew of the heavens and of the fat places of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. So if you think about it, and this is the way the Midrash usually describes it, this is a blessing that is ultimately twofold. There's certainly a physical blessing in here, but also a spiritual blessing as well. Let peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Mother's sons bow down to you. Okay, well, that would include Esau here, wouldn't it? And all of those who are the later generations. Cursed be everyone that curses you. This is the blessing from his father. And blessed be everyone that blesses you. It came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of doing those blessings over Yaakov, Jacob was barely gone out of the room. And here comes his brother Esau back from hunting. And he, too, goes and makes some savory food, brings it to dad, and says to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that your soul may bless me. And Isaac, his father, said to him, the same thing he just finished saying a little while ago, who are you? Well, he says, I'm your son, your firstborn, Esau. And at this point, verse 33 is interesting. And one of the things that I note that the Midrash always emphasizes here is Isaac trembled very exceedingly. Trembled very exceedingly. We often hear that, you know, somebody said this or did that, but it's unusual. It's less common in the Torah to hear such a description of an incredible emotion. Trembled very exceedingly. And when that happens, usually you know there's something really important going on. So it seems like Isaac at this point is starting to wonder, well, who then is he that's just taken that venison and brought it to me, and I've eaten of it before you came, and I blessed him? Yeah, you know what? He shall, in fact, be blessed. He doesn't say, gee, I take the blessing back. He says he will, in fact, be blessed. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried, here comes another emotional outburst, an exceedingly great and bitter cry. And he said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, this is Yitzhak speaking, he says, you know, your brother came in here with guile, treachery, with deceit, and he's taken away your blessing. Oh, boy, says Esau, isn't he just rightly named Yaakov? Because now he has, and supplanter is the reference there, the heel grabber. Has he not supplanted me these two times? Took away first my birthright, the one that, you know, I didn't really care about, but he doesn't mention that. And behold, now he's taken away my blessing. And he said, hey, Dad, haven't you got a blessing? Didn't you reserve anything for me? Isaac answered, and he says to his son Esau, yes, behold, I have made him your lord. And all his brethren have I given him to him for servants, along with wine and corn have I sustained him. Well, what then shall I do for you, my son? Esau says to his father, haven't you just got one blessing for me, O father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice, and he wept. And Isaac his father answered, and he said to him, behold, of the fat places of the earth will be your dwelling, and of the dew of the heaven from above. And by your sword You shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass that when you shall break loose, you will, in fact, shake his oak, his yoke, from off your neck. So there will come a time which you'll break free, break off that yoke of bondage. And Esau, it says, hated Yaakov because of the blessing that his father had blessed him. And essentially, obviously, it was the one he thought he should have had. So Esau said in his heart, let the days of mourning for my father be at hand. So when the days of sitting Shiva, mourning for dad after he's gone are at hand, I'm going to then go out and kill Jacob. The words of Esau, her elder brother, her elder son, were then told to Rivkah. And she called Jacob, her younger son. She said, well, you know what? Your brother's gunning for you, basically. Behold, he is as touching you, comforting himself by proposing to kill you. So he's taking solace in shedding your blood. So therefore, my son, hearken to my voice. Listen to me. And rise, get out of here. Go back up to my brother Laban in Haran. Tarry with him. Now this is also interesting. For a few days. Turns out it's going to be quite a few days. Until your brother's fury turns down, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you've done to him. Then, when that happens, don't worry, I'll send and I'll fetch you from up there, because why should I be bereaved of both of you in one day? Now, that too is interesting, and it does seem a little bit out of place, to the point where if you look at the Midrash, you'll see there's a lot of commentary about this one. Is, in fact, she a prophetess? Is she worried? Does she see a time when both of them might kill each other, and she loses both of her sons in a single day? So that seems to be at least an element of the warning here. Then Rivkah says to her son Isaac, I am weary of my life, and I'm really upset because of the daughters of Heth, those Hittite girls that your son, your older brother took. If you take a wife of the daughters of Heth, some like one of those, as the daughters of the land, well, what good will my life do me? So she's basically saying, hey, please, guy, don't, for crying out loud, don't do what your brother did. Don't get a wife from among these women and go find you something better. Chapter 28 says, Now Isaac calls unto Jacob, and he blessed him, and he charged him, and he said unto him, look, he's telling him the very same thing. Do not go take yourself a wife from among the daughters of Canaan. Instead, arise, go on up to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, my mother's father. Get yourself a wife from there among the daughters of Laban, my mother's brother. Okay, so this is, in fact, go back to the same house and find a cousin, find a member of that family. Don't, for crying out loud, don't bring any more Hittites in here. And Elohim bless you and make you fruitful. So El Shaddai, in this case, is the name that he uses. Bless you, make you fruitful, multiply you, so that you may be literally a congregation of peoples. And may he give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your seed. May you inherit the land of your sojournings, which Elohim gave to Abraham. So this is the blessing from Abraham to his son to now his son. Isaac sent Jacob away. He went to Padan Aram to Laban, son of Bethuel the Aramean, brother of Rivkah, and Jacob and Esau's mother. So Esau then, he sees that Isaac blessed Jacob, sent him away to Padan Aram, and get himself a wife from up there. So what is it that he's going to do? Oh yeah, well, okay. And they noted that he was given a charge saying, do not take a wife from among the daughters of Canaan. And he saw that his brother hearkened. He listened to his mom and his dad, and he went up to Padan Aram. So Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father. Now, that's an interesting way to put it. Literally, they were evil in the eye, is the better Hebrew rendering of that word there. They were evil in the eye of Isaac, his father. So what does Esau do? I guess this is how he sees it as an improvement. He goes to Ishmael and took unto the wives that he already had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife. So I guess it's a step up, maybe, is the argument, but probably still not exactly what his brother was doing. So with that, the Torah portion ends, and interestingly, like I said, this is essentially about as much as we get of the story of Yitzhak himself, and from here on out, now we're going to see the story of Jacob, and as it turns out, ultimately his four wives and 12 sons and one daughter, and all of the things that are going to come from that part of the main line of the patriarchs.